Welcome back. This is Tom Finneran. You are listening to our number four of Finneran's Forum on AM 680 WRKO. You know, every Monday at this time, we do the Boston Globe Report, brought to you by the Boston Globe. We try to cover events and personalities, interesting things going on in and around our town, in and around our world. And we do that with a variety of columnists. Delighted today to welcome to the Boston Globe Report on Finneran's Forum, AM 680 WRKO, the one and only Jeff Jacoby. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I am doing great. Jeff, we could do a four-hour seminar right now. I would just sit and take notes. I'd call it the Jacoby Tutorial, based on what I read in your paper, just on yesterday's paper.
You've already earned extra credit.
Oh,
well, off to a great start.
Let me tell you, this is going to be great. So the Boston Globe, in yesterday's paper, after I finished shoveling my walk, by the way, big endorsements, one for the Democrats, the one and only Barack Obama, and four Republicans, John McCain. I can hardly think of two more different candidates. But tell us, Jeff, a little bit about, from your experience and observation, what goes into an editorial endorsement? How does the Globe specifically go about vetting the candidates and coming to a judgment?
Sure. Just at the outset, we should note, as you know, but maybe some listeners don't, I'm a columnist as opposed to an editorial writer. So when I write on the page, I'm writing under my own byline and my own opinion, but I actually don't get a say or a seat at the table when it comes to picking the endorsements. So while I had my hunches about who my colleagues on the editorial page were going to endorse, I didn't actually know for sure until I opened the paper yesterday as well. But that said, essentially, they sit down and they do a lot of talking, a lot of thinking, and a lot of interviewing. And then they, you know, go behind closed doors, and when they've come up with the decision, white smoke is sent up through the chimney. And, you know, the message is sent out in Latin, habemus endorsi.
We have a candidate, a papal decision on Morrissey Boulevard. I'm sure.
Well, you know, for the last few months, most of these presidential candidates have been making the trek down to Morrissey Boulevard. And columnists and reporters are invited to sit in on those meetings. So, you know, we've heard from a bunch of them, and they basically open themselves up to whatever questions get fired at them from around the table. And then it's the decision of the editorial board, which is, of course, headed by the publisher and the editorial page editor and the editorial writers, to figure out who they're going to put together and who they're going to throw their support to. I got to say, I wasn't surprised. We were having a little in-house discussion last Friday as we were watching the snow begin to come down about who the endorsements were going to be, and my
an in-house discussion. That's fancy language for an office pool. Did you win or not?
I want you to know I called them both. And
Jacoby,
the editorial page editor Renee Loth, was giving me, you know, a very cagey look and saying, you know, what makes you think it'll be McCain and Obama? What about what about Huckabee? What about Hillary Clinton? And I just, you know, I just said, I've got a hunch it's going to be those two, and sure enough.
Hey, Jeff, you know, I was, from time to time, the Globe editorial page would mention my name when I was in public life, and I often had...
You were in public life?
Yeah, believe it or not. Sure. I often had the wish that I could inquire of them the way they inquired and made comment about me. From your sense of it, is it hierarchical in terms of making the decision, or is it democratic? So the publisher is sitting there, and if the publisher says, kind of with some emphasis, hey, I think Barack and John... really the two best. Is that pretty much end of discussion, or is it literally each, you know, one person, one vote in the Globe editorial board?
You know, I can't say exactly how it plays out at the Globe, since, in all honesty, columnists are not part of that process.
Sure.
I'll tell you a story from years gone by when I was working at the Boston Herald. I can remember these were the days when the Herald was still owned by News Corporation, which is headed by Rupert Murdoch. And I can remember it was the... It must have been 1992 when Pat Buchanan challenged George Bush Sr. in the Republican primary, and word came down from on high, meaning not from Pat Purcell, the publisher, but from Rupert Murdoch, the owner, that the Boston Herald would endorse Pat Buchanan in the New Hampshire primary that year. So, you know, a hierarchical doesn't come much more vertical than that. What I recall is that I said, you know, that's one editorial I don't think I'm going to be able to write.
Yeah.
In those days, I was writing editorials, not a column. Very, you know, very interesting process, and somebody could probably do a whole PhD dissertation on exactly how many votes these kind of endorsements end up swaying.
You know what, by the way, speaking of columns, Jeff, and you've made it very, very clear to all our listeners, I think they all get it anyway, but it's good that we add emphasis to it. Jeff is a columnist, and, you know, last week we had on Joan Vernocchi, and Jeff will be on a regular basis. I'm going to make sure we post up his column yesterday, the White House Menorah. Jeff writes with passion, literally can kind of make you tears, the tears well up right in your eyes when the great reminders he brings of the gift of life, the challenge of children, raising children to be, you know, have a faith and a foundation as they move through a world that sometimes seems to have no moral or spiritual foundation. So this will be good, good reading. Jeff, let's stay with the these endorsements for a minute. Tell me your sense of Barack Obama, what you've seen, what you've heard, what you've read about this guy. Is this guy ready for the White House?
You know, we never know in American politics. There have been all kinds of examples of people that we thought were the most seasoned political veterans imaginable, and they got into the White House and ended up doing a lousy job. There have been others about whom it was said that person is not ever going to be ready for prime time, and we end up looking back on them as American heroes. You know, Abraham Lincoln certainly did not have a whole lot of seasoned political experience as an executive or as a highly placed political official. Yet consider how we regard him. So you never know for sure. But I would say this about Obama. What struck me when I met him and when I've listened to him is that they're really, and I, as you know, I'm conservative. I'm more likely usually to vote Republican than to vote Democratic. But there's something refreshing about a guy who actually seems to be listening to you when you talk to him, who doesn't seem to have automatic, you know, canned answer number 24B that he sticks to no matter what the question and no matter how often it's worded or repeated. You know, I think that there's something about him that an awful lot of people find appealing. His politics certainly aren't mine, but I like his manner a whole lot better than Hillary Clinton's manner.
Let me ask you while we're on then, Barack, in this your sense of him as a human being and his willingness to listen. I talked about this last week on my show, and I said, you know, it seems to me, and I'd say this as a Democrat, Jeff, but a frustrated Democrat more often than not, because it seems to me there's a sense of stasis that is set in on our party and on our candidates. So Barack says, I am the candidate of change, change and hope, hope and change, and he uses them interchangeably. And yet I see not a dime's worth of difference between him and any of the Democrats on issues such as health care in the United States of America, Social Security, and the challenges that will confront the next younger generation and whether Social Security will be there for them or whether we even should make the effort as opposed to creating a situation of individual responsibility. So what, you know, where's the beef, I guess, to coin a phrase or question from a previous campaign?
I agree with you. I don't think that when it comes to policy prescriptions that there really is a whole lot of difference among the Democratic candidates, which is why I think that at least this year the Democratic primary is going to turn on non-policy ground. There may be somewhere a voter who says, you know, I like Clause 26B of Obama's health care plan better than the one that Hillary's got. But I think that for most voters, for most people voting in the Democratic primary, this is going to come down to how you feel about the candidate, because there isn't, as you say, a whole lot of difference on the stands that they take. You know, when Obama was last at the Globe, I asked him, I brought up a point that's come up often this year. I said, you know, by the time President Bush leaves office, the White House will have been occupied by members of the same two families for 20 years. And if Hillary Clinton is elected and reelected, that would mean 28 years in which the White House was occupied either by a Clinton or by a Bush. And I just asked him simply, is that good for American democracy? Is that something that voters should take into account? You know, his answer was polite, and he certainly didn't dump all over Hillary Clinton in any kind of rude or improper way. He basically said, look, you know, you have a choice between voting for the politics of the 80s and the 90s, or you can leave that behind and move on to the kind of politics that I hope to represent. But I think that too is just another way of saying it all comes down to how you feel about us. If Hillary Clinton is the kind of candidate that you know, at a sort of gut level you react well to, you can vote for her. But if you've got a feeling that you've had enough of the Clintons and enough of the Bushes and you're ready for a candidate, you know, who tries to exude, to toss off a different kind of feeling, you know, than somebody like Obama may appeal. I really think it's going to come down more to chemistry than to political prescription.
Let's hop across the aisle, if we can, to John McCain. This guy is an amazing guy in a lot of ways. What's your sense of John McCain, the person and the candidate? Did immigration harm him so badly that we're really talking about dead man walking, or is there a resurrection occurring right in front of our eyes?
I got to say, I like John McCain a lot, and I like him more and more, you know, the more that I see him. I think that there's something remarkable about a candidate who can get the endorsement, as he did this past weekend, of both, in fact, all three. The
Des Moines Register.
The Des Moines Register, the Boston Globe, the Manchester Union Leader.
Yeah.
When was the last time the Globe and the Manchester Union Leader, the yin and yang of New England political journalism, both came down in support of the same candidate?
Yeah, they can't even agree.
Lieberman, Lieberman has endorsed McCain as well. You know, that's got to be a strong selling point. George Bush, George W. Bush ran for office with that famous promise about how he was going to be a uniter, not a divider. But I don't recall that he was able to unite, such disparate
elements,
political
points
of view as these.
Yeah. Tell me what the Lieberman, how does the Lieberman thing resonate with you, or how do you see it, I should say, resonating with the public? Is this a kind of wow moment that is maybe even more serious than Oprah, because Oprah is an entertainment figure and Lieberman is seen as a thoughtful, knowledgeable, articulate, and principled guy, and Democrat nonetheless, at least once upon a time, who's crossed the aisle to embrace his friend and this guy, this unique guy, McCain?
Right. I think the biggest issue is the war on radical Islamist terrorism generally, and the war in Iraq specifically. These two have stood together. They've traveled together. They've endorsed sticking with the war and increasing the number of troops together. So on as far as any issue is concerned, I think more than anything else, Lieberman is supporting McCain because McCain has been stalwart on the war. But beyond issues, again, I think that there's a feeling that has more to do with your perception of somebody's character. If with Obama it's about chemistry, I would say with McCain it's about character. There's something gallant about McCain, not only the personal history and what he endured when he was in Vietnam, but the fact that he has taken these kind of slings and arrows for standing by a war that, everybody knows became extremely unpopular, criticizing Bush for his strategy and insisting not only that we not pull out of Iraq, but that even more troops needed to be sent in. And, at least the way things have been unfolding lately, he's proven to have been on the mark on that. There's something about McCain, I think, that leads people to think you may not be able to stand his position on policy, on issue X, Y, or Z, which is how I feel, for example, about the whole campaign finance.
I was just going to say, McCain-Feingold, I can say it as much as I admire and like the guy. I'll never forgive him for it. But
right. I think it's an outrage and a trampling of the First Amendment. And yet, I have to say, and I think most people looking at McCain would say, even if he drives you crazy on a particular issue, that this is somebody who stands... Who thinks through what he's doing, and then B, stands on principle and refuses to budge. Now, there's a fine line between standing on principle and refusing to budge and simply being stubborn.
Stubborn, sure.
And,
isn't
always clear exactly where that line is drawn. But, McCain is somebody who's got backbone, and I don't think, I would add one other thought. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world for the country to have an older president. We've had two younger presidents now for the last 8 years. Maybe it's time for someone... a little older and perhaps a little wiser.
One of the things that impresses me in line with what you just said about McCain and the principle and the character there, even though on a couple of positions you might be tearing your hair out saying, this guy,
right,
I'm going to kill him. He just refuses to genuflect on the altar of ethanol out there in Iowa. Now everybody else is down on both knees in complete abject supplication to the ethanol lobby out there, because apparently they've been told by an advisor, this is what you got to do. And McCain looks and says, this is the dumbest damn thing I've ever seen. I ain't doing it.
And on this one, he is not, this isn't even something that focus groups have told him he should do. He has been against these kind of pork barrel, outrageous subsidies and corporate welfare for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the leading stalwarts in the U.S. Senate against corporate welfare and, all these kind of things that get sneaked into I mean, don't mean to tread any painful toes here, John, but they could sneak into appropriations bills at the last minute.
Yes, they do, and he has nailed that consistently. Right. I my recollection of it goes back to the late 80s, early 90s. He was railing about corporate welfare. I mean, staggering sums of money, Jeff, that, you know, you really could devote to infrastructure or better tax policy or a million other uses, including perhaps just reducing the level of expenditures.
You know, I think it was McCain who said, again, the last time that he came to visit the Globe, I may be misremembering this. If so, one of my colleagues will correct me. But I think it was McCain who brought up this business about the bridge to nowhere. And he said everybody knows what that means now. Everybody knows that there's this $250 million bridge in Alaska to connect a tiny island with 12 people to the mainland. That's an example of of an issue on which he has always been, by my lights, taken the right position.
Yeah.
And, again, I think for a candidate to manage to get the endorsement of both the Boston Globe and the Manchester Union Leader, and an independent Democrat like Lieberman, that really suggests somebody who truly brings disparate points of view together.
That's a rare trifecta for sure. Jeff, last question. I let you go. You've been great with your time here. Help me understand. Help our listeners anticipate. How do the Democrats at this point handle the issue of Iraq in the aftermath of a surge which they condemned across the board? They said it would never work. Everything that I read and see, including in the New York Times, which obviously does not like George Bush or our Iraq policy, even the Times says the surge seems to be working beyond the claims even of George Bush.
I have been very disappointed in the way Democrats have conducted themselves on this issue. It seems to me that they've really allowed themselves to become emotionally and politically invested in defeat, in retreat, in withdrawal from Iraq. One of the things that I think the election will turn on next year is that you've got one party that, for the most part, has embraced the idea of winning, and another party that, for the most part, had been embracing the idea of losing. If things continue to get better, pray God they will, I suppose Bush's popularity will continue to improve as well. And you'll find Democratic candidates who had been the most vehement in their denunciations of both of them gradually backing away from it. And I suppose it'll be the job of the Republicans not to let voters forget who said what when and who was willing to stick with supporting something when it didn't look like it was so politically popular to do so. I think that they will, the Democrats will simply, do a little bit of a shuffle and move themselves away from their strong denunciatory language. They've done it, they've been doing it over the past few weeks. They don't denounce Bush quite so vehemently about the wars they used to, or they cast it in terms of, well, things are going better now, but it wouldn't have required all of these years if he hadn't been so inept and incompetent in the first place.
In the first place.
Et cetera,
yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah.
It'll be something like that. Political response as opposed, I have to say with some sadness, as opposed to a response that's based on what is really in the best interest of the United States and of the values that we're trying to defend.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, listen, you've been great. We have thousands and thousands of listeners here on Finneran's Forum who actually think there's probably nothing finer than to see a spirited presidential contest without anybody enjoying the advantages of incumbency, just to watch
right.
that.
This is a first this in is, a long, long
yeah,
time.
This is, and that's what's exciting, and we try to bring it to them fresh and live every day. And I have to tell you, our conversation this morning is really the frosting on the cake for these thousands of listeners, because there's a lot of insight there, and you've met with these candidates and you have your own sense of what's right and wrong. Jeff Jacoby, great, great columnist for the Boston Globe. Thank you for joining us here in the Boston Globe Report, all of which has been brought to you, obviously, by the one and only Boston Globe. So we will do that again, of course, next week. And special thanks to Jeff Jacoby. We will also be back with you and your calls in a moment on AM 680 WRKO.